looking for you down in the house. The tree is looking so inspired. There's a Yuletide groove waiting for you to move. I go and throw another log in the fire. Everything's gonna be cool this Christmas.
Everything's gonna be cool this Christmas.
Everything's gonna be cool this Christmas.
WGN Radio and John Williams. Thank you, Veronica Carter, for doing the news and for listening to a little Christmas music with me. You'll hear some between now and 3 o'clock and a bunch of other stuff as well. So it's you and me now, huh, Veronica Carter? Well, lucky me. Welcome to my show.
I was just going to say it's always lucky to hang out with you, John.
Maybe I should say welcome to your newscast.
Yeah, I was going to say, am I on your Christmas list now that I gave all those accolades?
Yeah, but I'm not a good gift giver, so really it doesn't do you much good.
That's all right. The whole gift thing gets a little kind of carried away anyway, so...
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a couple of stories that continue to resonate this week, and you've mentioned both of them in your news. One is, of course, whatever Donald Trump is saying these days, and the other one is the funerals that now are taking place in California after San Bernardino, and I wanted to play just a little audio that's relevant to all of that. The first one is, of all people, of all commentators who had anything to say that I thought was interesting, and there were many of them this week, I thought what Charles Barkley said during the NBA telecast on TNT was really interesting. This goes about a minute and a half. The first thing he said about Twitter is brilliant. The last thing he says in this clip is quite surprising. This is, and really, why do they kick it over to Charles Barkley and say, hey, Charles, what do you make of Donald Trump? He's sitting there on the sideline of an NBA game. He's a political creature. He's thought about running for office before, and I think that Barkley's terrific. He's smart. He's funny. He likes to stir it up, but I don't see him as an agitator per se. He just speaks his truth, and he knows sometimes that ruffles feathers, but he never backs away from it. So he's a really interesting commentator. And if he weren't talking at times about, say, sports, I think what he would have to say about politics or social issues would be interesting to listen to just because I think he's smart, even though, of course, we don't all always agree with him. But anyway, they kick it over to Charles Barkley, and they ask him, what does he make about Donald Trump?
Hey, listen, I told you, Twitter's where fools go to feel important. I'm never going to do any social media. Hey, Ernie, this Donald Trump thing has been fascinating, sad, funny. It's all over the place. He started out in sudden... insulting the Hispanics. To lump all Hispanics together, that was insulting. Now to lump all the Muslims together, that's even more insulting. Listen, this is the United States of America. This is the greatest place in the world. Do we have issues? Of course we have issues. And then you got these losers who love that because they're afraid to look in the mirror and say why their life suck. So they have to blame other people. Your life sucks for a reason because of you. Not because of Hispanics. Do we have to do something about the extremists? Of course we do. But it's been sad to watch every time he insults people and his poll numbers go up.
Do you wish you could be on that stage? Or has this soured your possible political aspirations?
Not at all, Ernie. Because, listen, the truth always comes out in the wash. The guy I was supporting was, I've always voted Democratic. In my life, but for the first time I was thinking, I made a final decision to vote for Republican. The guy that I was supporting was Governor Kasich out of Ohio, but he has not been able to get any traction whatsoever because, and to be honest with you, CNN has done an awful job this election, an awful job. They have followed ratings and sound bites this entire cycle. I mean, think about it. And I love CNN because they're part of our company, but they've been kissing butt, chasing ratings. They follow every single soundbite just to get ratings for these debates. And it's been sad and frustrating that our company has sold their soul for ratings.
It's Charles Barkley on CNN, and I think he's on to something there. I think the media loves the Donald Trump story, and so we all talk about it. There's a difference between maybe what Veronica does, that's news, and what I do, which is sometimes talk about the news, and they seem to be blended, but they're not really. I don't expect CNN to just do what's got the most sizzle. That's my job. I turn to CNN for them to give me the news, and then I'll decide what is most sizzling. But I think Barkley is absolutely correct. I think one of the reasons that Trump is resonating so much these days is, A, because he's pushing buttons that people like. They agree with what he's saying. There's some legitimacy with some people to what he says. But there's also some of just the fact that he's interesting, he's funny, he's outlandish, he makes you crazy, and CNN goes ahead and delivers that, and then everybody sort of laps it up. And you think, yeah, but wait a minute, was that true? Was it real? Was it relevant? Is it important? I don't know what the measures are for news, but I'm not sure everything Donald Trump says should be news. But they keep packaging it as that. And so Barkley's upset because his guy Kasich can't seem to cut through. He can't even get a word in on the debates. Remember that? He was the one on the end saying, hello, is anybody paying attention over here? So Kasich isn't probably going to be your next president. I don't think Donald Trump will be either. But I think what Barkley is saying in that soundbite, A, Twitter's a place for fools. I could prove that. And then the last thing he said I think is true, too. CNN isn't John Williams. CNN should be delivering the news, and everything Trump says doesn't have to be, even though it's tantalizing, it doesn't have to be. So well put, Charles Barkley. And then there was this soundbite from this week. Again, we were talking about guns in America, and the president of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr., stood before his students in Lynchburg, Virginia, where they are building champions for Christ, they say, at Liberty University. And so Jerry Falwell's son, is the president of the university. And he's got all of the kids packed there into the basketball arena. And it's just packed. I think on Friday nights he gives a speech. And this is part of the speech that Jerry Falwell Jr. gave to the students at Liberty University.
If some of those people in that community center had what I've got in my back pocket right now. Is it illegal to pull it out? I don't know. Is that? I've always thought if more good people had concealed carry permits, then we could end those Muslims before they walked in and killed them. I just wanted to take this opportunity to encourage all of you to get your permit. We offer a free course, and let's teach them a lesson if they ever show up here. So
it's hard to know what's most discouraging about that. A, that that's the president of a Christian university, or B, that the kids are cheering wildly that sort of rhetoric. They're impressionable minds. And by the way, if you had a kid that was going to that school and the president of the university just sort of threw down on all of the radical Muslims there and said, essentially, bring it, we'll show you how we play ball in Lynchburg, I think I'd be in a station wagon right now getting my kid, putting him in the car and saying, you're going to Wheaton College. By the way, the kids at Wheaton this week said that's not a Christian response, and they gave their own. And it was much more Christian. One last soundbite for you, though. As we all go crazy listening to the Jerry Falwell stuff, the Donald Trump stuff, I sort of came up with a little tool that's at least useful for me, and maybe it would be useful for you too. When Trump goes on one of his harangues and he's saying something like, we have to ban the Muslims or they're evil, or whatever it is that he wants to say, and you are sad for America, play in your mind a sitcom laugh track. If you do that, it matches pretty well the way he delivers a speech anyway. He pauses, he riffs, he repeats things. I'll just give you an example of what that could sound like. You'll have to do this on your own, but I'll at least get you started on the notion here.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. Until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Okay, you got to admit that works. We'll pause here. I wanted to get your opinion on A, anything I've said so far, but B, it's a talk show, but B, the Naperville Central High School Red Hawks, I think, are doing something exactly right. Cheers to the student body. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN.
Christmas will really be Christmas when folks are happy everywhere. Christmas will really be Christmas when there's laughter for everyone to share.
Tell them, Lou, that's perfect. That's perfect.
When people can live with each other.
It's Lou Rawls, not Lou Manfredini, by the way.
When peace on earth has come to stay. I said Christmas will really be Christmas with the whole world in a better way.
Where is everybody on the Naperville Central High School Redhawks story? Naperville Central High School Redhawks were asked recently by the Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation to stop praying before their football games. You've been following this story? The school said they would comply. The students on the team this week said that they will not. The coaches and staff might not bow their heads on the field before the games, but the players say next season they will. The kids are still going to pray, which in my mind is as it should be. The school doesn't have to sanction it. If the kids want to do it, let them. If in that circle a kid wants to pray to God, he can, or to Allah, or he can think about his girlfriend. This same Freedom From Religion organization got the town of Wadena, Minnesota this year to move the town nativity scene off a public park. It was on public property. You're not supposed to do that. I thought we all got that memo. And so they moved it to the lawn of a privately owned hospital. And then something amazing happened in this little Minnesota town. People started to put up nativity scenes all over the city. Hundreds and hundreds of lawns started to sprout them. Wadena, Minnesota is now per capita arguably the most nativity town in the United States of America. So, and probably the Freedom From Religion Foundation people are okay with that. I don't know that their purpose is to snuff religion out or squelch your beliefs. They just don't want the public sphere. They don't want the, you know, government to be endorsing anybody's faith. So that's okay. This is not, and it sort of put Christmas back where it belongs. It's not the business of the government to put it on the courthouse lawn. I sure don't have a problem with that. But isn't it terrific that the people said, fine, you want to take that one nativity sound? We'll put up 350. And so they're all over that little village. Back to Naperville Central High School for a second. So the students want to pray. The coach would be, you know, I'm not sure who leads the prayer per se. I don't know exactly how that happens before a football game. But when you look at the pictures, you see the coaches there and the staff or administration, who's ever with the kids, and they've all got their heads bowed and they pray before the game. I sure don't have any problem with that. You're probably not supposed to do that, right? So don't do that. And I think the school was right to comply with the request, saying this is probably against the law. So the school now says we won't do it. But the kids, they don't care. They said, oh, yeah, we're still going to do it. If my kid was on that team and he wanted to pray silently, maybe one of the kids gives some generic, you know, it might get tricky when you actually describe the language that'll come out of somebody's mouth if they were going to pray out loud before a game. But I sure don't have a problem with that. I don't know what your take on that is, but I'd be kind of interested in it. My number is 312-981-7200. I think if the kids want to pray, that's okay. And I don't know that what I just described is a violation of the law anyway. So maybe they ought to be able to do that. There's one other controversial statement that kids in high schools are making. The one in Fargo, North Dakota. Did you hear about this? I'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Oh, and yeah, Rokan is out and about town collecting toys. He's going to check in with us in a couple of minutes as well. Again, the number's 312-981-7200. Okay, so let's start with, I think it's going to be Denise on line one. Hi, Denise, it's John. You're on the air. How are you?
Hey, John. Hi, King John. I love listening to you. But I have to say to you, you know, I don't care if they put a menorah up. I don't care if they put a nativity. How dare strangers come into your town and tell you what's right for you?
Yeah.
These people aren't even from this state,
nope.
From the town, and they have the right to come and tell them. Government is for the people and by the people. How dare they come in there and do that?
It is kind of weird, isn't it?
It really upsets me. It really does. You know, because apparently these people want a nativity scene in their government land. Who's paying those taxes? Not those people who came in, who said, well, you shouldn't do this. This is against, separation of church and state. Oh, come on.
Separate.
My goodness.
I don't know that you get to scoff at the notion separation of church and state. I hate that somebody else sticks their nose in our business too. But
that's what it is. I understand totally. I understand. You can't force your beliefs on people. I totally get that. I wouldn't want that to happen. That's not what the United States is about. But it is about community, and it is about protecting your rights also. And I feel that when these
I know you're all wound up, Denise. I got a lot of folks that are. Thanks for the phone call.
Bye-bye.
You have a good day. I'm going to pause here. We'll try and get a few more of your phone calls in the next half hour. Denise is still doing her own show at home, but we have to let Rokan get a word in here edgewise. Is he on line 6, guys, by the way? Rokan is supposed to join us right now here. Oh, take a break first? Okay, then we'll check in with Ro in a minute on WGN. Let's talk to Ro Khan now. He's out doing something for kids. I guess you're generating some toys. Is that it, Ro?
Yeah, the Toys for Tots program, and which, John, as you probably know, has really, really gotten hit hard this year for a couple different factors, including online shopping and stuff like that. So we're at Apple Chevy, one of the fine sponsors of WGN, in Tinley Park, 8585 West 159th Street. And we've got Chevy Silverados, red and white Chevy Silverados. We've got Marines. We've got a gigantic Santa Claus. We've got food. We've got all this stuff. If people just want to bring one toy or two toys. But we had, listen to this, Southwest Airlines Flight Attendants Union dropped the Midway chapter, the Midway local, dropped off 200 toys to us just
now. Wow, that's great. I didn't know that they were getting hit that hard. Is it because people aren't going into the physical stores so much and dropping toys off?
They think that's one of the reasons, yeah. It's just that it's, online stuff, and they don't really have a mechanism yet to deliver them directly to Toys for Tots. I guess that's, would be probably a smart way to go. But at the moment, it's just become a real issue. So people are coming here, they're dropping off toys. Also, they take checks and cash, and the Marines, I was just there as the Marines were discussing the protocol for that. They're not allowed to touch the cash.
Really?
It has to be in an envelope. So we had to go get a bunch of envelopes for people.
Like giving it to a radio DJ is safer. I'm not sure that you should be touching it either.
Oh, no. I said that exact same thing to him because I do not want to go out in, federal handcuffs before the end of this thing tonight. So that's really cool.
So you guys got food and stuff there, too?
Yeah, there's food. There's a restaurant called Black Sheep that is catering this, and we've had close to 100 people come by. There are probably about 700 toys, and we're trying to get to 1,000 by 3:00. That is our goal. So if people are down in the Tinley Park, Orland Park area, wherever you happen to be, if you're listening and you have some toys, or you want to go pick up a toy or two and then drop them off here, it's for a great cause.
No kidding. Okay, Apple Chevrolet, 8585 West 159th in Tinley Park. Are you going to be there for the next half hour, Ro?
I'll be there for the next hour and a half.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At least.
Let's get the toys over there ASAP. Right. All right, we'll check in with you later, Ro.
Oh, thank you so much, John. Appreciate it.
That's our Ro Khan, and you can head on over there right now or soon. He's going to be there for an hour and a half. Apple Chevrolet today, and that's at 8585 West 159th in Tinley Park. Thank you, Veronica. Skating along on WGN, this is John Williams. You can like me on Facebook, by the way, facebook.com. I'm King John there, and only there. I've long wanted to be king. The paperwork's tied up at Cook County, so I'll have to just live with it on the radio a little bit. But on Facebook, I'm King John. There we post each Friday, and it's there today. A podcast we call Mincing Rascals. It's a roundtable with Eric Zorn, columnist from the Chicago Tribune, our own Steve Bertrand, and Kristen McQuarrie. This segment from that podcast, I'll just give you a sense of what we talked about this week. It was pretty good. Kristen McQuarrie was talking about Mayor Rahm Emanuel's apology for the culture that allows police brutality. Kristen McQuarrie said this.
He said he was sorry, but he didn't really lay out for everyone the mistakes that he made. And people fully understand that City Hall tried to block the release of that tape for over a year, that videotape. And I don't think he's done a good enough job answering questions on that specific issue.
Mm-hmm. Is one of those apologies where it makes you wonder what's he sorry for, the fact that Laquan got shot that way or the fact that we saw the video? What's he really sorry about? Would he be apologizing were the video not made public, right?
Well, none of this would be happening if this video weren't made public. But that's pretty clear. The video being made public has created this crisis that's forcing him to act.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you see my point, though, Eric? I mean, so what's he really sorry about? Kristen says he didn't maybe go into specific enough detail. What maybe he had to do with this? Or I don't know, Kristen, why is that apology not good enough for you?
It was good enough for me. I'm okay with the fact that he took on these issues. What bothers me and why I think people are still very skeptical and cynical about it mm-hmm. is this. I mean, the way that police officers are disciplined in the city has been a broken system for a very long time. He gets asked about it occasionally. I mean, he's in his second term. I thought something was very telling that another reporter said, you know, over the years when these issues would come up, he was very dismissive about the police authority board and just the whole broken system, really couldn't have cared less. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it seems it's not even just the 13 that we waited for charges in Laquan. It's the 5 years he's been in office and been just completely dismissive of what everyone understood was a very deep problem.
Well, don't you all think he really does care? But maybe the reason the apology seems thin is because what are you going to do? How can you change that police culture?
Well, this is a fascinating op-ed in the Friday Tribune. By Jamie Calvin, who's been one of the biggest critics of the mayor over the years and someone who is a watchdog about police brutality issues and police conduct issues. And he basically makes the point that one of Emmanuel's mottos is that, you know, you never let a good crisis go to waste because it gives you this opportunity to do things that you couldn't otherwise do. And that what's happened here, Calvin's assessment was, I thought, surprisingly generous, which was Emmanuel could not probably have taken on this police culture, this entrenched culture of the code of silence and the looking the other way without a crisis like this, and that he is taking advantage of this crisis mm-hmm. to do something that it seems like Calvin is saying he could not have done in those first 5 years. I'm not sure that that's true. I'm not sure that – I think I agree with Kristen and some of these other people who've made this assessment that he's had 5 years to express indignation and outrage or at least try to move the needle a little bit and hasn't. And he does owe an apology for that, and I don't – you know. His apology is probably not sufficient to do what needs to be done, but this is an opportunity, and he at least you can say at least that he's not denying there's a problem. He's not trying to point fingers elsewhere. He seems to be taking it on.
Right. So there are two tracks, correct? I mean, there's the political and whether this will cost him his election 3 years from now, whether he can overcome it and get support in the city council. There's that, but then there's the much more real track of whether there really will be changes in the police department. And that's one that's going to be a little more easy, I would think, to measure, to see what he does. And he's naming a new superintendent. I think he probably, you know, I think that's a great point about this crisis gives him an opportunity to really go in and change things. But it seems like the change is going to have to be fundamental and pretty much across the board. And that's a tall order.
No, and it takes time. I mean, because what we're really saying is those police officers who police the West or South Side are going to what? Have an attitude adjustment? Can you imagine those guys that are cruising those streets looking at the mayor saying, really, so I'm supposed to do what now? You come do this job and tell me how easy it is. And I can just see how that makes them, you know, a little maybe indifferent to the complaints of people in the community.
If they're cutting corners and cooking reports on the South and West side, they're doing it on the North and Northwest side, too, and on the East side.
Well, but doesn't that even make it that much more challenging?
Yeah, it does. But I mean, I think this is probably a department-wide, not a neighborhood situation.
I wonder if the Police Review Board, what do they call that? The
IPRA?
IPRA, Illinois Police Review Authority.
What do we think of that? Is that thing kind of a rubber stamp? Is that real? Should they refigure that whole thing?
It completely needs to be blown up and reconfigured. It came about, I think, in 2007 because there was just an internal police review. And people thought that was too subjective. So they came up with this where it's citizen-appointed board. It happens to be, though, mostly retired police officers, people who are still not objective when it comes to these cases. And yes, they haven't found, you know, out of 400 cases they've handled since, I think, 2007, they have disciplined an officer twice I mean, that statistic is so glaring that it's actually hard to believe that we had to come to this point to seriously look at that agency.
One last thing about this. I didn't see the video, but how is, you know how whenever somebody apologizes, it almost makes it worse because it's such a delicate art, the apology. You know what I mean, Steve? How did the mayor do, or Eric, or Kristen? Was that a good apology? Did it seem, did it hit the right notes?
I don't know. You know, I don't like dissecting apologies because they're never enough, or people are always going to find something they
right.
didn't like. So I just don't. Okay. So, but
that's the funnest part.
But
Steve.
Wait. But having said that, I wasn't sure. When he did it, I had to go back and say, "Oh wait, he just said he was sorry."
Yeah.
I kind of missed it when it happened the first time. So, so this one was a little slight.
So were you there? Were you listening? Did you
watch
it later?
I was watching online, and yeah.
And so none of it tugged at your heartstrings.
Oh no, it did. I think he was genuine, and I think at the end, I think when he talked about. You know, I think it was a young black kid asked him, you know, do you think the police treat you the same way they treat me? And he said the answer is no. And then he got pretty emotional. He says that has to stop. No, I'm on the sincerity bandwagon with him. I am. I'm just saying when he did say he was sorry, it kind of there wasn't this sort of preamble as if here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of was there and then they moved on.
What did you think, Eric?
Well, I mean, I had that same sort of reaction. Was okay, he's sorry, but he didn't really enumerate exactly what he was sorry for, and that might have gone some way in making it a more convincing apology. I will say this though about this whole movement to get him to resign. He's not going to resign.
No.
Okay. And these protests are a little noisy, and they're getting some coverage on the TV news and so on. But they're not. It's not like the masses have taken to the streets and have shut down Chicago. Mayor Emanuel's going to be in office for the next, 3.5 years, and we need to sort of get our minds around that and to try to hold him to his word about reforming these agencies as well as he can. And if the protesters who are upset about this, they need to register voters, mobilize, and go after Anita Alvarez if they think
right.
they want to make a statement.
Right.
Because that, you know, she is someone who is politically vulnerable. She might go in the next year. But Mayor Emanuel's not to march around saying Mayor Emanuel resign. That's just a waste of lung power.
Speaking of apologies, one person who's not apologizing this week is Donald Trump. He said that the U.S. should ban any Muslims from coming into this country. Party leaders criticized that statement. Late Night Comics had a field day this week. Even 300,000 citizens of Great Britain petitioned Parliament there to ban him from entering their country. In this country, a CNN poll found 57% disagree with his position. But maybe only 57% said they disagree with what he said. Steve Bertrand, what's your thought about Trump's comment this week?
I was watching the speech on Monday that he gave in South Carolina after he released his statement. And I reacted personally in a way that it was kind of unique to me because, you know, I watch politicians who I disagree with and I get angry and want to throw my socks at the TV or politicians I like. And I watch. I had a physical reaction to him. My stomach turned. It truly turned, and it was not just about what he was saying, but he was trivializing the people who've been killed. I mean, he had his finger cocked, and he's going pow, you know, and then he looks at someone else, and he goes pow, and this crowd was fomented. And what bothered me most was their cheering. I mean, they were cheering this guy on, saying the things that he said, and it made me sick. I mean, it just made me. It turned my stomach.
Yeah. So that's our Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie. That podcast goes on in that direction. Then we talked a little bit about Wheaton College. And we have recommendations at the end of the podcast. It's called Mincing Rascals. Of course, it's free. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. However you catch your audio, you can certainly listen to it at WGNplus.com. We always post a link to it directly on my Facebook page. I am King John on Facebook. It's called The Mincing Rascals if you just subscribe to it on your smartphone. The Mincing Rascals. John Williams here on WGN Radio. In the next hour, we talk to Brian Tallarico, the managing editor of RogerEbert.com. It's fun to talk TV and movies, of course, with him. And we'll focus in the next half hour on one specific category, the Golden Globes, the dramas. The nominees are Mr. Robot, Narcos, Empire, Game of Thrones, Outlander. I'll bet you don't watch two of those. I've watched every episode of all four of those. And I think I know what Empire is about because I watch Fox TV and they're always promoting it. So I know the Terrence Howard story, and it's this hip-hop empire, and they're all fighting for control of it, and they wear fabulous clothes and say very dramatic things. That's Empire. Then you've got Mr. Robot, you've got Narcos, Game of Thrones, and Outlander. Telerico and I and you get a chance to kick around what we like in that category and what we don't. That'll come your way in the next hour here on WGN.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree won't be the same if you're not here with me.
All right, thank you, Kang. That's a little Elvis Presley getting us closer to the top of the hour news. Again, we'll talk about TV in the next half hour. And then we'll close the show today with our segment from the Vibe app, the Vibe Score app. I wanted to just go back to that for one quick second here. When we asked on Vibe Score, which is an app that I developed with my cousin, it's free. You can download it right now and put it on your phone. It's called Vibe Score. It's one word. And it's where we let you score the news. We say, hey, what do you think of these new candy cane speckled Nike running shoes? And there's the picture of them and the story about how they're new. What do you make of what Donald Trump said? Or what do you make of the off-season moves by the Chicago Cubs? By the way, Cubs Nation is loving what they're doing right now, right? Very high scores for the Cubs management right now. But we asked you just in general this week, what's your vibe, if you will, for Donald Trump? And I think that right now he's pulling on a scale of 1 to 100 a 17. But let me just read you what the scores are. So you get to comment on there. You get to read the story. You can watch the latest video that Trump posted or whatever, or a link to, say, CNN. You get your news there. And then there's always a question, and it asks you to score it. So if we just said, what do you think of Donald Trump, 1 to 100? Here are, I'll just start reading the scores that he's getting. 10. 0, 0, 10, 0, 75, 4, 45, 4, 0, 5, 10, 82, 0, 10, 0, 10, 0, 1, 93, 0. You get it? That's how Trump's surviving. Everybody, you talk about your negatives. Look at all. I've never seen anybody's vibe score, anything's vibe score, more polarizing than Donald Trump's is this week. He's got a 93, an 82, a 75, a 45. I'm just looking at the one first batch of numbers that come in. And then everything else is 10 or less. Incidentally, in that podcast, The Mincing Rascals, Kristen McQuarrie, the editorial writer for the Tribune, Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, all of them are now starting to lean towards coming to terms with the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican Party's nominee. And I'm still living in la-la land, I guess. I said, no way. That is not going to happen. That is not on my watch. He is not going to be the nominee. So we'll check the vibe score numbers. That'll come your way in the next hour as well. And you can listen to the entire podcast. And that's posted in a couple of places, but obviously it's on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. One other note, and that is that we are still going on that trip to Paris, and I hope that you can come along. We're going to be, my wife and I are leading a group to Paris. We're going to stay at a 5-star hotel there. We'll be within walking distance of the Louvre. We'll spend an afternoon in Versailles. We'll cruise down the Seine. It's really going to be lovely. We'll be staying at this one hotel for the entirety of our stay, and then we've got little excursions planned with plenty of free time. And one of the things that we're really excited about is the fact that we will go to the world's largest flea market. MSNBC was just there doing a story a couple of weeks ago. The world's largest flea market. If you want more information, if you want to come along with us, it's April in Paris. Go to WGNradio.com or call Steve Bertrand Travel at 847-606-6065. That's 847-606-6065. Okay, we'll pause here. WGN Radio News coming up. That music, you probably recognize it from the TV show Narcos. Thank you for the news, Veronica Carter. This is John Williams, and I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the TV shows that were nominated for Golden Globes. We'll also hit on a couple of movies later in this conversation. Brian Tellerico joins us, the managing editor of RogerEbert.com. Hi, Brian. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Really good. I appreciate you giving us some of your time. I know you're good at movies. You're good at TV, too. Let's start with the drama category. Do you mind?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, I just, when I saw the nominees, thought, oh, wow, all of my favorite shows are there. Mr. Robot, Narcos, Empire, Game of Thrones, and Outlander. First, yeah. Is there anything conspicuously absent there? Would you have changed that group of five some way?
I would have changed a lot of it. The thing about the Golden Globes for me that I find interesting is they're so clearly desiring to be current. All of those shows, Game of Thrones is the only old show there. Everything else premiered in the last 6 to 9 months. And I get that, like they want to be fresh and look to the future and all those kinds of things. But Mad Men's final season was kind of amazing. Better Call Saul is a great show. Americans is a great show. There are options they could have made that I think are better than Outlander and Narcos.
Really?
You don't agree, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those are two of my favorite shows, so no, I'm going to hang up on you now. Well, does Empire belong on there? Is that the one that is not the same kind of show as the other four?
Again, that's a desire to be culturally hot. They want the hottest show on network TV, and they want the stars on the red carpet. To be fair, that's what the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is all about. That's why they nominate household names more often than anyone else, because they want to get the stories and get the headlines. And I get that, but I mean, Mad Men's final season was remarkable. I don't see how you not nominate that for anything if you're talking about about television. But they've always been this way. They want to be the first group to give a prize to a new show because they beat the Emmys by 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Although it's also sometimes a function of the way they slot them. The Martian is listed in the motion picture category as a comedy or musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got some funny it's light, but it's a drama, right? I mean, it's an adventure. And then Fargo isn't on this list, but Fargo is listed as sort of a mini series.
Right.
Although all of them are kind of that anymore. But so Fargo doesn't make this list, and it would be on my list of the top five shows of the last 12 months, too.
Oh, certainly, yeah. Fargo was nominated in mini series, though. And that's where the Emmys place it as well, because it's such a different story and crew each season. So they've been doing that for American Horror Story as well.
Yeah, right.
It's a different arc and different narrative every year. And they should have done it for True Detective, but they got a little mixed up there.
Fargo
ended up in drama.
And Fargo was better in year two than it was in year one. Do you agree with that?
I would agree. I liked it a lot in year one, but I think it's the best show on TV in year two.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, I think it is too. Kristen Dunst, the cast is really good,
and
they've got a lot to do. And by the way, it's one of those series where it reminds me of I don't know, Breaking Bad, or pick a show where a lot of people die each week. Well, then who are they going to have left?
There's only one left.
Yeah,
only one left.
Kind of.
And go to Vulture.com. I've been recapping every single episode and pointing out little bits of trivia and references to the Coen Brothers movies and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well,
on Vulture.com.
Talk to me about Vulture.com. Talk to me about Mr. Robot. This is the USA Network
TV show
with Rami Malek and Christian
He's
Slater.
Great.
And
He's
it's
great.
The story of a young man who is a hacker. Is he doing good or is he doing evil? Is his world real or is it not? Do you like that show a lot, huh?
I do very much. And because I think that's a good, smart, hey, let's look to the future type choice. Although they could have nominated Better Call Saul, too, which is had an amazing first season. But back to Mr. Robot. You watch Mr. Robot, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think it's got an amazing visual language. It's constantly doing different kinds of shots that you're not used to seeing on TV, whether they're low angles or all kinds of negative space in the background. It doesn't look like any other show, kind of like to try to represent, I believe, the characters, for lack of a better phrase, not to spoil anything, confusion about the world in which he lives. So, I think it's a really good show.
Well, Narcos does a little bit of that, too. That's the Netflix show about Pablo Escobar. And I don't know how much of this story is true, but it feels biographical.
Right.
and there's screens that are split sometimes into three, and it's visually interesting. And I just think Narcos is just breathtaking.
I'll give it another try, just for you.
well, no, you're the guest expert. So, what's your problem with Narcos?
The writing. I think it's too many of the characters are too thin, and the dialogue's too on the nose, and everyone's saying what they're doing and why they're doing it. But to be honest, I didn't go a whole season. I can't do a whole season of everything, or I'd be dead doing nothing other than television. So maybe I should try to dig a little deeper. But the few they set for review, the first couple episodes, I wasn't into.
Wow. There's an article in Vanity Fair, the latest one that just came out a couple days ago. And in there, a writer talks about how hard it is to watch the TV that you want to or need to watch these days.
Yeah, it really is. They call it peak TV because there's too much of it.
Well, that's it. And then they look at somebody like you and say, what do you mean you didn't watch all the episodes of Narcos?
Yeah, right. And I literally, guess what, guys? I got a dirty secret for everyone. Every TV critic has not seen every TV show. Every movie critic has not seen every film. And just the way it goes, we are human. We only have so much time. And when you're like me and you do them both, it can be a little overwhelming.
Are you – talk to me for a second then about Empire on Fox TV.
Yeah.
It's a primetime soap opera. It's got cool themes and predictable themes in a storyline.
Sure.
But it seems to have a huge audience.
It's a cultural phenomenon. By some metrics, it's breaking records in terms of net of television ratings. It was the highest rated show of last year by most, if you count in DVR usage and stuff like that. And it did something no other show's ever done, which is every single episode of its first season was higher rated than the one before it. So more people tuned in every single week. Usually in TV, the opposite happens. People get bored of a show and they stop watching it. But Empire actually had that coveted word-of-mouth buzz that seems so impossible to find with so many things out there nowadays. Empire found a way to make it work. Hmm. It is a legitimate phenomenon. It's a huge, huge story this year. And so, like I said, I get why a group that's looking for red carpet attention and pretty people in seats would want to nominate it. And I'm not saying it's totally not deserving. I just think in an era of peak TV, when you've got Mad Men and Better Call Saul and Hannibal and The Americans and Halt and Catch Fire, you've got better choices to make than some of the choices they made this year.
Let me play a soundbite for you from a TV show called Outlander. This is on Starz TV, and it's the strangest premise. I guess it's based on a book, so there it is. Either way, though, the story is a World War II nurse who gets transported back to 1743. Here's a take from that.
It's your own time. On the other side of that stone, you've a home there. There's nothing for you on this side. Nothing. Save violence and danger.
Music is like that. The speaking is like that. That was in English, by the way. It's easier to understand on TV. But they are beautiful. And the romance is pretty hot in this show. And the storytelling is pretty good. I think that's an interesting choice. Maybe it's more to your point. They're trying to be ahead of everybody on this, but it is a good show.
It is a good show. And like I'm saying, they didn't make horrible decisions, but I think what they did is they looked at networks like AMC and Showtime getting a lot of Emmy attention lately, and they went, okay, let's do Starz and USA and Netflix. You know what I mean? It's like they're kind of trying to beat the Emmys at their own game, get their own attention. They can't, and it makes sense. They can't just give the same shows that the Emmys gave awards 4 months later. That wouldn't get any attention.
It's
just be like, oh.
And it's 90 people in the foreign press, so maybe they look at it differently than we do. I mean, good Lord, you certainly have a cynical view to this, don't you?
Well, John, this is the group that nominated Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp for The Tourist and nominated Burlesque for Best Picture, Musical or Comedy. So, yeah, I think it's a little cynical, but I think they've kind of earned that cynicism.
You're scarred. You've permanently been damaged by some of that.
Yeah.
Here is a soundbite from the last of the five that I just wanted you to comment on. This is from Game of Thrones, the HBO medieval fantasy that stars, among others, the great Peter Dinklage.
Lannister, Targaryen, Baratheon, Stark, Tyrell, they're all just spokes on a wheel. This one's on top, then that one's on top, and on it spins, crushing those on the ground.
It's a beautiful dream. Stopping the wheel. You're not the first person who's ever dreamt it.
I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
The visual effects on this show are just so spectacular. Does this one belong on the list?
Yeah, It's not in my like personal top five, but I don't think you could get away with not nominating it. And that's the show that actually did win the Emmy. I think it's, like you said, the production values are remarkable. It looks like a Lord of the Rings feature film every week. They spend amazing amounts of money on every episode. It's kind of redefining what you can do with television in those regards. Yeah. No more four-wall sets. It can look like it can look better than a lot of summer blockbusters.
Yeah, it so really that, does. Yeah. Brian Tellerico's on the line. He's the managing editor of RogerEbert.com. I want to talk to you about a couple of movies, but as we leave this, I didn't ask you in advance to give me your top five then, but I mean, you've mentioned a few of them here. Just spew a few names of dramas, regardless of is it Emmy-worthy or Golden Globe-worthy. Just tell me some dramas you're really liking right now.
That they're currently on the air, or like, I'm going to do a TV piece for this site in a couple weeks, and I'll give you a sneak preview. I think Mad Men had the best season of any show this year. I think they ended it perfectly. I think Better Call Saul was the best new show. Totally keeping up Breaking Bad's lineage, and in many ways being more morally interesting than Breaking Bad. I love, as far as under the radar things that people might not be watching, Halt and Catch Fire on AMC is fantastic. It's a show about the early days of the Silicon Valley, the computer industry. It's really great. And the show Silicon Valley is pretty great too. If you want some comedies, I like that show a lot. I like Veep a ton. And they did nominate Veep at the Golden Globes too. That's a great show.
They did. It's hard to watch Veep for me. It's just, it's one of those shows that's so good, it's painful. And maybe you felt that way about some scenes in Seinfeld where they were all just too awful and you couldn't enjoy it. And I feel about that just about every minute that I'm watching Veep.
Right.
All right, let's pause here for just a minute. We'll come back and then give me some movies that you're liking and thinking about relative to the Golden Globes. Brian Tellerico's on the line. This is WGN. Tellerico is the managing editor of RogerEbert.com. Let's talk a little bit about some of the movies that you're watching and that were nominated. What stood out to you lately there, Brian?
For the nominations or just in coming out in the end of the year? What do we want to do first?
Start with the nominations.
I can't believe how well Mad Max is being awarded during award season. I mean, it's a movie that I absolutely adore. In fact, I think it's the best movie of the year, but I didn't expect SAG and the Golden Globes to nominate it for Best Picture. I mean, that's just amazing.
Here you are running them down. They don't know what they're doing. And now you've got...
Certain things are undeniable. The Force of Fury Road cannot be stopped. I love that movie.
It's in the drama category, which I guess it has to be. The picture nominees for that are Carol, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. Not a bad bunch of films there.
No, not at all. Not exactly my five, but some very good choices. None of them are bad films. So that's a good call. It's not like The Tourist or Burlesque, two past nominees I pointed out earlier. No, those five are very solid. And I don't know what it's going to be honest. The theory for a while there was that Spotlight was going to be, was the presumptive Oscar winner eventually. So we'll see if that really starts to pick up steam here or if Carol can pull it off. Carol was actually the most nominated film for the Golden Globes.
You know, I saw that and I don't know much about that movie. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
It's Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, Kyle Chandler. Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara in the 50s, and they fall in love. So it's a lesbian love story. And it's but from Todd Haynes, who did Far From Heaven, and the Mildred Pierce adaptation on HBO, which won a dozen or so awards. It's just a fantastic period piece. Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara are both absolutely phenomenal. They both got nominated, and it's a great, great movie. It's in my top five. That's a good one. And even the comedy musical, as much as we want to make fun of The Martian, the nominations there weren't horrible. Like they could have made some much worse decisions there. In the past, they've had to stretch to find five worthy comedies in some weak years.
Yeah. So this year they have Trainwreck, Spy, The Martian, Joy, and Big Short for Best Picture Musical or Comedy.
Again, not a bad film in there. Not exactly a great film in there, but for the comedy musical category, that's a little tough to fill sometimes. So,
let me insert
end of the year. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to insert this about those two groups. Spotlight, we saw, I thought was really, really good. I really appreciated the restraint in that movie. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There wasn't this dramatic scene where everybody throws the papers in the air because we got them.
Right.
You know, it was just a simple, you know, telling of a story, and a great story from a journalistic standpoint.
Right.
And about Trainwreck, I like that a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, it's good. It's a funny movie.
It really, really is. End of the year, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I've pretty much seen everything because we have to vote for the Chicago Film Critics Association by tomorrow. So they try to show us everything either via screener or screening early. So the only big movie I haven't seen is, you can guess, the only movie that I haven't seen yet.
Star Wars.
To see. Yeah, of course. But I'll get to that next week. But other than that, I like Quentin Tarantino's new movie. If you're a fan of his, that movie really works for me. I like The Revenant, and that comes out in a few weeks. My review of The Revenant's going up Monday.
Really? Can you tip your hand a little on that? That looks like a tough movie to watch.
It's exhausting. We walked out of the screening, and I turned to a few people and just like, I need to go take a nap. Like, it's so exhausting for 150-something minutes, and it is intense. And it's not a great film. I think it kind of doesn't quite get what it's grasping for in the final half, but it's really kind of an amazing technical accomplishment. There's a bear attack that is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen on film. I have no idea how they did it, if it was a real bear or whatever, but it's shot like from the ground and it's horrifying. It's just like it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in a movie. And there's actually a couple scenes like that where you're like, how did they do that? Well, they filmed it for 9 months chronologically in the middle of the winter, in the middle of snow. So it was an intense shoot. And I think it's finally going to get Leo DiCaprio his Oscar, which he doesn't have yet. So
the rumors were that the DiCaprio bear scene got out of hand in a couple of instances.
And that was a silly rumor.
Okay, never mind. Then we don't have to talk about that. But yeah, the rumor was the bear got the better half of him, and I guess that didn't happen. Okay, fine. Well,
no,
good. Did you see Concussion?
Not yet. I have not. I have that in pile here. They send us, like I said, we get a lot of screeners at the end of the year to make sure we've seen everything. And I'm thinking about trying to watch that tonight, although most of my colleagues who have seen it have not said the kindest things about it. And I've heard it kind of skirts the issue it's trying to deal with, which I can imagine I would be frustrated by.
You will be. Yeah, I saw it a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, oh, I was so ready for this to just take the head off of the NFL. And it doesn't have a lot of teeth. I'm sorry. I'm disappointed.
Well, I heard they approved it. I heard they had to approve the script to get the NFL licenses to use the names and stuff.
I was wondering about that. I thought, how in the world is the NFL cooperating with the movie?
Right.
Because it's all – the NFL licenses and protects everything.
Right.
And they're using players and footage and logos. Yep. And I thought, how did they get this stuff?
They had script approval, which is kind of a problem right from the very beginning.
No.
Yeah,
because at the end of the movie, they said the concussions were good. And I thought, wow, that's really a surprising conclusion for the movie. Give me one other film that maybe I'll enjoy if I'm going to go out this holiday season. It doesn't have to be Miracle on 34th Street. But what's just a good movie to see?
It's coming out in the next few
weeks. You mentioned a lot of them.
Carol is great. I think that opens here right around the new year. Like I said, if you've liked anything Quentin Tarantino's done in the past, you will like his new movie.
Yeah, what's the name of that, the new movie?
The Hateful Eight.
The Hateful Eight. And is Big Short funny? Does that work? The book was good.
Most of my colleagues absolutely love The Big Short. I find it a little less interesting than other people do, but it's a good movie. I find it a little cluttered. It's one of those movies that uses lots of animation and trying to explain things to you over and over and over again when it kind of just needed to settle down a little bit, in my opinion. Right. But the performances are great. I mean, the cast is phenomenal. And it's a very smart movie, so I would recommend that one, too.
Nice to talk to Brian Tallarico. By the way, that piece you're writing is in Vulture, is that right?
The Fargo stuff is in Vulture. Most of my stuff's on RogerEbert.com. So the Revenant review will be up on Monday at RogerEbert.com. But I'm doing TV recaps over at Vulture, which is New York Magazine's entertainment site.
Yeah, got it. Brian Tallarico from RogerEbert.com. Read him at Vulture, too. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for giving us some of your time on a Saturday.
Thanks, John. Have a good one.
Yep, stay well. There he goes. Our Vibe Score segment comes your way after the news and traffic and weather, and that's all next on WGN. Veronica, I know you did it in the news. I'm just reading more about the 200 nations that have adopted that global warming pact in Paris, and I'm pretty excited about that.
I know.
You know, it's funny because I'm like, being excited about this doesn't mean that we're going to stop global warming, but I guess we won't mitigate it as much as we can if we don't all agree to try and do something. So they have done this.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, at first I saw that it's not going to really happen until 2050. yeah. at the earliest. And I thought, gosh, that's forever. And then, wait a minute, that's not really that far. You know?
Well, I guess by global standards, 32, let's see, this is 2015, so 35 years isn't forever.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is interesting, too, is that the temperature degree that they said, okay, let's not let the Earth go beyond 1.8 degrees, I think, was that Celsius? No, Fahrenheit. Let's see, another degree Celsius. Yeah, from rising 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degree Fahrenheit. They want to keep global temperatures from going up that much between now and 2100. And everybody needs to get going. They need 55%. Here's just one of the paragraphs from the Tribune today. The deal now needs to be ratified by individual governments, at least 55 countries representing at least 55% of global emissions before taking effect. It is the first pact to ask all countries to join the fight against global warming. And then this is funny. President Obama tweeted, "This is huge." That sentence has been stolen from our vocabulary. Anytime somebody says this is huge, you think Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Barack Obama saying that. And I almost wondered if he wasn't winking when he said it or not. And then he said almost every country in the world just signed on to the hashtag Paris Agreement on climate change thanks to American leadership. This is huge.
I have a feeling he was probably doing a tongue-in-cheek type of thing.
I know, because if he's not, then the joke's on him. When you see this is huge, you think Donald Trump, which is shame. It's too bad because it's a fun sentence to use, but Donald Trump kind of owns that.
He does. Maybe Obama's just been listening too much to Trump.
Maybe we all have. I have in front of me the list of the most Instagrammed spots in all 50 states. So think about that. People do fun things in all of their states, and then they get their pictures taken. And if you look at how things are tagged, you can see what comes up the most often. So, for instance, in the state I live in now, Minnesota, pictures that are tagged Minnesota State Fair. The Minnesota State Fair is the most Instagrammed spot in the state. So sometimes it's an event like the fair. Other times it's just a static place like in Wisconsin. Well, where would you have a guess? Griff, you can guess on this too. Where in Wisconsin would be the most Instagrammed spot?
World's largest Culver's.
I was going to say anything to do with cheese. A big cheese curd?
Two good guesses. Actually, one good guess and one ridiculous guess, but the correct answer is Miller Stadium, Miller Park.
Okay.
North Dakota, it's the University of North Dakota. South Dakota, it is
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore, ding, ding, ding. In Illinois, it is
Sears Tower?
Yeah, or the Hancock. Gosh, I don't know.
Where do people take selfies? Where do people love to stop and take a picture?
The Bean.
Oh, that's good. It's not.
What?
Well, because you don't get the kind of crowds at the Bean that you get somewhere else.
People take a lot of selfies in that Bean, though.
They do. Wrigley Field is number one.
Makes sense.
Yeah. California?
Yosemite?
Golden Gate Bridge?
Disneyland? Boy, you guys are really bad at this.
Worried about guessing something that's not in the state, so I'm being very tentative.
Let's see, Idaho. Oh, what do we know about Idaho? Potatoes.
Well, let's see. Idaho, I can tell you what it is for Idaho. It's the Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Hmm.
So I wish I knew more about
Idaho. If you'd given me time, I would have gotten that one.
Google. It's called Google.
Okay, Missouri.
No. The Arch?
Well, now the Arch would be a good guess. And by the way, that is in Missouri. So bonus points for Veronica. She knew that. It's the St. Louis Zoo, which is also very popular. I'll give you just a couple more here because Lord knows this is fun. I'm looking for Indiana.
I was going to say, is Indiana even on the list? Do people even take photos? You know,
that's right. Indiana, it's Wrigley Field. They actually leave Indiana and come to Chicago rather than admit they're in Indiana.
True story. Before I moved there, I was having a friend tell me, I said, tell me even one interesting thing about Indiana. And the only thing I could come up with was the Popcorn Fest.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
So
now that's a running joke in my family. But we've got the Popcorn Fest.
It's funny because I've spent a lot of time in Indiana. My son went to Butler University, mm-hmm. so for four years while he was playing ball, we were driving there all the time. And I came to like Indianapolis. It's a really nice town.
And the traffic compared to here?
I know.
You could actually park downtown.
You really can. And if you have to pay, it doesn't cost a lot. The last one I'll give you is Washington, D.C. The most Instagrammed spot in our nation's capital is?
The nation's capital.
Actually, well, no, the capital is where the Congress goes. And the president is in the White House, and it's the White House.
Okay.
I'll bet you the Capitol's number two. So that's the most Instagrammed spots among 50 states and the District of Columbia. Let's see here. Wyoming, Yellowstone National Park, Alabama, the Denali National Park. A lot of the national parks are on there, too. It's time to move now to our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is an app that I developed with my cousin Tom. You can download it for free. If you've got a smartphone, go ahead and get the Vibe Score app on your phone. And then it'll give you the news that you're interested in. If you're into fashion, if you're into sports, if you're into politics, whatever you're into, there's the story that comes through in a stream. And it asks you a scorable question on each of these. One of the categories is, of course, music. And that's one we'll start with right now.
The spirit's up. We're here tonight. And that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Okay, so we went back and
the party's on.
Started to play some of your favorite Christmas songs over the years and said, okay, what's your vibe for Paul McCartney Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time? How did that one score, Griff? That one was, I think, like a 69, right? I thought that one would do higher.
It's in the 60s. I thought it was going to do lower. I've only heard people talk about how they don't like it.
63, yeah. So Wonderful Christmas Time, Paul McCartney scores a 63. I gave it a higher score than that.
I gave it an 80. I like that song.
How could you not like Paul McCartney? Sorry.
Right, and it's a Christmas song. It's like double your fun. 1 to 100, Veronica, what would you give that?
I'm saying 97, because, you know, otherwise you have to hear something done by Mariah Carey over and over.
That will appear on VibeScore this week, too, by the way. So we'll put that to a test. Politics. We just said, you know, how do you decide what to do with Donald Trump? So we just said Donald Trump, VibeScore. Do you like him or what? 1 to 100. He's scoring right now a 17. I went through his scores earlier, and the scores are go like this. 0, 0, 4, 10, 98, 5, 2, 3. I guess that doesn't surprise you in a way. Either you hate him, and some people really love him. But nobody drops a 62 on Donald Trump. It's either a single-digit score or the occasional 75 to 100, and then there's a few in there.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the 45. That was the only one in the middle.
Yeah, really. And I think that person may have just hit the button wrong. I actually don't think – I don't know how you're a 45 on Donald Trump.
You do see a lot of suspect 50s.
Oh, yeah, you will see that
sometimes.
Where you
sometimes think, do you really feel – I do vote 50 sometimes. But
I never do. I force myself – because when you start, I think it's – is it set at 50, Griff? I think if you just don't think to score it to the left or right, 50 is the neutral starting position.
Yeah, and you can go either way from there. But I did vote a 50 in sports today on the Warriors breaking the Bulls record, or potentially.
Yeah, right. We gave you a 1 to 100 on that. We said in Vibe Score, in the sports category, the Warriors could break the Chicago Bulls record. They haven't lost a game this season. Do you want them to beat the 72-10 mark the Bulls put up once upon a time with Michael Jordan and the gang? And right now, that is trending at a 51. Meaning, yeah, just a little bit more than not, people want to see the Warriors break the Bulls' record.
But just barely. I gave it a 50. I saw another guy give it a 50, and he said, records are made to be broken. And I felt you know, that's true.
I gave it a high mark because I like seeing the game played as well as it can be played. If they, like, think about it. They are right now the equivalent of a baseball team opening the season at 40-0. It's a fourth of the season. They haven't lost a game. Can you imagine the Cubs or the Yankees or somebody, and they win their first 40 games? How can you not appreciate that? You cheer that on, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
I start to root too hard for some of my votes on these things. Why did we do Harrison Ford this week? Why are we vibing Harrison Ford?
He's in the upcoming Star Wars movie. He's been making the rounds on the talk shows.
Oh, okay. Boy, he's a delightful interview, isn't he? So I gave Harrison Ford, I think, a 13. Some people like him more than me. He's got a 44 right now.
I might have gone 50 on that one again. No opinion either way. I kind of missed out on his classic movies. But that's the thing. You were around for the Harrison Ford classics, and you still don't like him.
I think he's the luckiest actor to ever live. Food and drink. In that category, we asked you about the new Mountain Dew chicken wings. Please. That's getting a 32 right now.
I gave it a 29, so I'm right.
That's high. I think that's generous.
I think you were at a 10 there.
I was.
I'm all about scientific progress. I feel like we need to experiment to see what...
We've not stretched the bounds of science or imagination enough. Chicago sports, we asked you about the Cubs signing Jason Hayward and other moves the Cubs have been making. And, yeah, the Cubs vibe right now is an 85. Las Vegas has the Cubs for next season winning the World Series. How could you be against what they've done so far this offseason? In the Chicago category, if you just follow Chicago on Vibe Score, we asked you about the football team that bans school prayer. That is Naperville Central, the Red Hawks. The kids aren't supposed to pray anymore. We asked you, do you like the kids praying before the games or not? And that checked in at a 58, meaning that it's not a slam dunk. People are very divided on that. A score of 58 just shows how contentious this issue can be, right?
I give it a 49. So just slight, because I do, if it's a public school, I do think separation of church and state is important. But I did have a hard time mobilizing myself to really feel too serious about it. It's hard to see the downside of a little prayer on the field.
I know it's hard to be against prayer at school when the kids are all... To me, it's as much about unity as it is about God. It's about, let's all just have this quiet moment together. It's a dangerous game. We've practiced a lot. Let's all go, do well, be safe, have fun, ready, set, go. And if you pray to God for that, I don't see the harm in that. So it's hard to be against it, but you got to be against it. That's just kind of the American way. Well, maybe you disagree with that. That's the beauty of Vibe Score, right? There was one other riff that I wanted to mention here before we take a quick break.
The viral video of the girl with Santa?
Oh, yeah, yeah. How about that? People are loving that one.
It's a girl who can't speak, as Santa finds out while she's sitting on his lap. And so he begins to sign with her, and they kind of sign back and forth. She doesn't know too many, but it's just a very sweet video, and it's getting a 93 right now.
We also put up in the viral video category the video of the bald eagle attacking Donald Trump, and karma's a bitch. You know, it's a beautiful thing to see, if you ask me. Robbie Gould is getting a 58. Sorry, Robbie. You can... download for free the Vibe Score app. If you've got a smartphone, go ahead and get it. Follow the news there. It asks scorable questions. Vibe Score is one word, Vibe Score. The boys from the beat talk sports. We'll say hello to them in a couple of minutes here on WGN. Mark Carman and Connor McKnight are getting ready for some sports talk here. The boys from the beat. Connor, is that you over there?
Absolutely. What's up, John?
Not much. I haven't been on in a long time and haven't had a chance to say hi to you in forever.
It has been a while. It feels good, though. It feels like coming home, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, and since you and I spoke last, the Cubs have now made it almost a certainty that they'll win the World Series next year.
It's done. I was talking with Major League, my sources at Major League Baseball, you know, inside the organization. Yeah. They may just cancel the season and just wrap this thing up, print out some rings, go to Jostin's, get some diamonds pressed into some silver and call this thing done.
I wonder if the fact that Vegas has them as number one, it's sort of like the Sports Illustrated jinx. It dooms them now.
Well, you know? Remember, I think it was, what was it, Kerry Wood on the cover of Sports Illustrated in 2004 after the NLCS against the Marlins. You know, we've been here before. And if you remember, during the, I want to say it was like a month before the All-Star break this season, SI came out with the Astros issue. The Astros were on the cover. and it was SI, was predicting that in 2017, the Astros, in their massive rebuild, would defeat the Cubs in the 2017 World Series. And just kind of chronicling, you know, the rebuild of both franchises and what they'd done to add young talent and all that kind of stuff. What I find amazing about this Cubs offseason is that the gas pedal has been pressed down in another way that no one really saw it being pressed down quite yet. And they seem to, Theo and Jed and the Ricketts, seem to be willing to do that each and every time they get to that next step of the franchise.
Well, what's more remarkable, the amount of money they're spending or the fact that the players that they like are available and happen to be playing for St. Louis recently?
Yeah, I think that's the more remarkable part, John. I think that's a great point, too, because if you look at, you know, Jason Hayward and John Lackey's contributions to the Cardinals last year, you can make the argument that they were their two best players all season long. So not only do you take them and add them to your fold, but you take them away from the Cardinals, you know? The money in baseball is absolutely astronomical. I think I was doing the numbers the other day, and between the money that the Cubs spent on Lackey, Jason Hayward, and Ben Zobrist, the new second baseman they brought over from Kansas City, they're spending about $257 million committed. Now, obviously, there's opt-outs and it gets weird. But Boston spent $217 on David Price. You tell me what you'd rather do, three players for 257 or one for 217 who's pitcher and going to be 38, you know?
You sorry to see Starlin Castro go?
I am. And we'll talk about that quite a bit throughout the afternoon because I think maybe it's the right move. And, you know, I can't give the whole show away, John, but maybe it's the right move and maybe it's not.
He's such a little squirrely kid, and I'm going to miss him.
Yep.
You know, I've never been more frustrated by a player, mm-hmm. and I found myself at the end of last season not liking a player more than I have him in a long time.
Tough not to root for that guy at the end of the year. My God, he'd come back and been one of the best players in baseball in the last 2 months.
And he grew up. He finally got – you think like he finally started to figure it out.
It looked that way.
Was your favorite Starlin Castro moment when you said what used to make you nuts about him when he went into the hole and then mimicked the third baseman who got the ball and did the pretend throw behind him?
Yeah, when
and
Bryant.
My God, dude. Although I was telling somebody, they said, who's Starlin Castro? They didn't know anything about baseball. I said, he's a really talented player. He's a nice kid. He's kind of squirrely. Mm-hmm. I said, you know how in Little League when you turn around, you lose track of what's going on, and you miss an entire pitching rotation, play?
The whole thing.
He did that, too, and they go, no. And I go, yeah, a Major League Baseball player missed a pitch. How does that happen?
And the shortstop, no less. I mean, the guy who's going to get the ball hit to
him. It might come your way.
7 times out of 10.
He's not in right field.
No, he's not picking. You can't pick dandelions at shortstop. First of all, they don't grow in the dirt. And secondly, you're not there to pick dandelions.
Well, that's your show, so thanks for giving it to me.
Absolutely.
I'll let you do a different version of it in a minute, all
happy
right?
Happy to do it. Happy to do it, John.
The boys from the beat are around the corner on WGN.